Welcome to BioTime, a podcast to help you pass high school biology and understand the science of life. My name is Chris, and I'm your host today. Hey guys, today we will be talking about how variation is preserved in a population. Variation is what keeps the population healthy and strong. The greater the variation in a population, the higher chance that they have to be able to withstand whatever the environment throws at them. Today we're going to be talking about six ways in which a population can preserve variation. The first is balanced polymorphism. The second is sexual reproduction. The third is outbreeding. The fourth is polydiploidy. The fifth is heterozygote advantage. And the sixth is frequency-dependent selection. Let's start by talking about balanced polymorphism. Balanced polymorphisms is where two or more phenotypically distinct forms of a trait exist in a population. So this means that within the same species, let's just take birds for example. Maybe some birds are green and some birds are brown. But with two different phenotypes being exhibited, there's a higher chance that the bird population will survive, as let's say that perhaps a part of the environment in which a bird lives is all green plants, bushes or something. And that means that green birds in this area will be better hidden. And perhaps another part of the environment in which they live is all trees. And these trees all have let's say that the color of their bark is brown. And with more different phenotypes existing, this means that the birds that live in this area with the brown bark, this means that if they're brown, they're probably going to have a higher chance of survival. So we can really see the effect of geography and what kind of phenotypes, and remember that phenotype is just the physical characteristic being expressed by an organism. So we can see how, where an organism lives, its environment, and how that affects what phenotypes a species may want to express and why a species might want to express different phenotypes. And this brings us up to a vocab word. It's called a cline. A cline is variation in a population due to geographical differences. And just like our example that we just talked about with the green birds that are going to stay in a forest that's green, and the brown birds are going to stay with the wooden barked up trees, and this shows us how geography affects the phenotypes of species. And now on to our second point, sexual reproduction. Sexual reproduction is absolutely vital for variation. Essentially, when two parents come together, each have a set of chromosomes. Each are going to have two if we're talking about diploid organisms. And their offspring will take one chromosome from the father and one chromosome from the mother. This gives each offspring a mixture of genetic material from both parents. And with a mixture of chromosomes in the offspring, along with other things such as meiosis, fertilization, shuffling, recombination, this all really comes together to help generate genetic variation. And something I want to touch upon while we're talking about genetic variation is crossing over. This is something that occurs during meiosis one. It's where genetic material is exchanged between homologous chromosomes. And I think that a really easy way is to visualize this in our heads. So you can imagine one red chromosome and one blue chromosome. Let's say that they're right next to each other. And let's say that these chromosomes decide to swap their legs, right? Imagine like they look like two X's, and like a portion of the X breaks off and the portion of an X breaks off on the other chromosome, and they swap the portions, right? So now the red chromosome is going to have a part of a blue chromosome on it, and the blue chromosome is going to have part of the red chromosome on it. And you can see that now these chromosomes are a mix of each other. And that is where we can get more genetic variation. So really that process is called crossing over. Another thing I want to touch upon is random fertilization. When sperm are released, there are usually millions of them all going for an egg. But sperm are not all identical. So this means that there's a random chance of each sperm binding to an egg, and we also called eggs ovums. And you can see is that when there's a random chance of unidentical sperm that are all very different and unique in their own way, trying to get to an egg to, you know, create offspring, this means that there's a lot of genetic variation that is possible. All right, let's move on to our third point, and that's outbreeding. And this is mating of organisms within one species that are not related. And the mating of organisms who are not related will allow for great genetic variation, as it's unlikely that they have a similar genetic makeup. As if you think about it, if you're not related at all, it means that like your genetic pools, it's very difficult for your genes to be too similar, right? But let's take the opposite into account also, inbreeding. This is where organisms who are closely related mate together, so perhaps we're talking about within the same family. And this leads to very unhealthy populations. With low genetic variation, offspring, as the result of inbreeding, often carry a lot of diseases. An example of this can be seen in the Florida Panthers in the 1980s. And even still today, Florida Panthers are very, very rare to see one. It's like, I'm not sure what the probability is, but I can promise you it's definitely very low. As back in the 1980s, only 24 Florida Panthers existed in the wild. And you can imagine that with so little options for mating, all of their offspring came from parents that were very, very closely related. So their genetic variation was very limited. And what happened was that the panther population just slowly started dying off, and it eventually their death rate picked up a lot as the problem of inbreeding was like imploding upon itself. And then all of these new baby panthers that were being born out of the process of having parents that are very closely related, they start to get all these heart diseases and reproductive issues, and it was a big, big mess. And now on to our fourth point, and this is diploidy. And so di means two, so when we're talking about diploid, we're talking about two sets of chromosomes. And all or nearly all mammals are diploidy. So remember how earlier we mentioned that during meiosis, each parent has two chromosomes, and one is randomly passed down from each parent. And this means we're going to have genetic variation on our hands. And what happens is that when a parent stores two different chromosomes together, either can be passed down. And this means that a species, that within a species, all the offspring have so many opportunities to have these slight genetic variations. As you know, like when, if a parent can pass down one or the other chromosome, it means that there are different phenotypic traits that can be passed down. So we can really think of a parent set of two chromosomes as like a box of traits, whether it be, you know, maybe you can pull out eye color, you pull out height, or you pull out hair color. You know, it's just random chance what you get. But the beauty of this is that these traits get translated to offspring. But what happens is that when you have this ginormous pool of offspring with all these different traits, we know from thinking about like Darwin's theory of evolution and just how, you know, natural selection works, we know that the favorable trait is going to allow species to survive. But what's most important when we're talking about preserving variation in a population is that this favorable trait has to be available to achieve in the first place. As remember, it doesn't exactly just like pop out of nowhere. That's why we're saying that having diploid organisms that have two chromosomes help to preserve variation, because it's kind of like a safeguard that's like telling us through natural selection that, oh, if I have two chromosomes, I'm able to create genetic variation because I can continuously create offspring that look different, that are phenotypically different, that are genetically different. And if I'm able to do that, I'm able to have a population that is ready for anything, you know? So maybe perhaps a new predator is introduced, and now all of the traits that allow for an animal to have longer legs to run faster now becomes more favorable. But this means that because that trait was available, this species can now survive. Right? So that's a very important concept to understand. And remember that if we're talking about the opposite of diploidy, which is that there's only one chromosome, and perhaps we keep on passing down the same chromosome, it means that there's no genetic variation. So if something in the environment were to change, chances are that species will not adapt, so variation will be limited. And now to the fifth point, heterozygote advantage. Heterozygous means to have two different alleles of the same gene. And when we're talking about heterozygote advantage, this is when a hybrid individual is selected because it has a high probability of survival. And to help you understand this concept, let's look at the most popular example, which is sickle cell anemia. Most people in West Africa are hybrid individuals, meaning that they carry one dominant copy of the sickle cell anemia trait and one recessive allele for sickle cell anemia. And this seems odd as we think about it. Why would you want to carry a gene for a harmful trait, and why is it popular? All right, so let's get some background on sickle cell anemia. Red blood cells transfer oxygen from our lungs to all over our body. And what happens with people who are inflicted with sickle cell anemia is that when someone has a disease, the usual circle-shaped cell becomes crescent-shaped. And when you have like this odd shaping that looks like a crescent, it ends up clogging up arteries, blocking blood flow. But this allele is quite common, with up to 20% of people in parts of Africa carrying at least one allele for sickle cell anemia. This is because the heterozygote advantage we spoke about earlier. Those who are hybrid, meaning they have a dominant and a recessive allele, all right, listen very closely, they do not have sickle cell disease, and they have normal hemoglobin, and they're resistant to malaria, right? Really, you know, positives. But then when we look at individuals who are homozygous, they end up with abnormal hemoglobin, and that means that likely they're going to die. And so you can see that we see it's advantageous to have to carry this mutation for sickle cell anemia to keep in the gene pool, as the people who are able to just get one copy of this in the form of being like a hybrid, I guess, to have one dominant and one recessive copy, it's favorable for you as you have a higher chance of survival. And now on to our sixth and final point, which we're going to discuss, is frequency-dependent selection, right? This is also known as minority selection, and personally, I find this point the most interesting of all the mechanisms of preserving variation that we talked about today. And this is where predators tend to kill what the majority of a population looks like, and not like the odd ones out. And I'm going to explain what I mean by the odd ones out. So what happens is that a predator develops sort of what we call a quote-unquote search image in their mind when they go out to hunt. And so when they see their prey, they're looking for to try to match this image. And if you think about it, chances are the image that they have in mind is probably what the majority of the population looks like. So if you're some wild card, you know, prey that your entire species has black fur, but for some reason, you got some genetic mutation and now you have white fur, chances are the predator is not going to hunt you because you don't exactly match their search image. So, you know, let's take like the story of the ugly duckling into our hands. Chances are, while the ugly duckling was bullied, the ugly duckling is not going to get eaten because he looks so different. You know, so moral of the story is sometimes it's good to be different. Alrighty, now that we have covered the six mechanisms that help to preserve variation in a population, let's do a quick recap. The first mechanism was balanced polymorphism. This is where within a species, multiple different phenotypes can be expressed, as perhaps some birds of the same species are green and some birds of the same species are brown. And having two colors increases their chance of survival, as they're now more adaptable to whatever the environment throws at them. And now on to the second mechanism, which is sexual reproduction. Sexual reproduction allows for an increase of genetic variation, with meiosis allowing for each parent to give a chromosome, things like crossing over. Each offspring is going to be unique and have a greater amount of variation. Now onto the third mechanism, which is inbreeding. This is where animals who are not genetically similar are mating, and so they're not closely related. When organisms who are unrelated to each other produce, there's a higher chance that their offspring will have more variation, and that's going to make them stronger and healthier. The fourth mechanism is diploidy. This occurs in all mammals where parents carry two sets of chromosomes. This means that each time they mate to carry offspring, only one chromosome from each parent is passed down, so it's really like shuffling their chromosomes to make a mix, and this mix helps to fuel genetic variation within a population. The fifth mechanism is heterozygote advantage. This is when it's advantageous to preserve multiple alleles in a population, or in other words, a hybrid individual is more favorable. And we see this in people in West Africa, where a majority of people tend to carry a hybrid mix of the sickle cell trait, as this allows them to be resistant to malaria and also not suffer from sickle cell disease at the same time. Alrighty, on to the final and sixth and final mechanism, frequency-dependent selection. This is also known as the minority advantage. Predators often have this search image in mind of what their prey should look like. So if you get some genetic variation and perhaps your color changes, you know, maybe your size changes or something about you changes and you look different, there's a higher chance that you're not going to be hunted, which increases your survival rate. Alrighty, that wraps it up for this podcast on preserving genetic variation in a population. Thank you for listening, everyone.